So this morning, I want to talk a little bit about where we're going to go today. So today, we've been preaching out of Luke. We're going to take a break from Luke for just a week, and then we'll come back to Luke. So don't worry, we'll continue in Luke. This morning, I want to go over Psalm 23. So it's a pretty well-known psalm, and it's a psalm that is probably something if you're in the older generation, it's something you've had to memorize at some point and learn. This morning, I want to go over it again and just kind of look at the context a little bit of what we see as far as how a shepherd would see this. So we see the different pictures in the Bible that we talk a lot about sheep, lambs, shepherds, and there's this talk with shepherds and sheep. And we see this picture in Psalm where David is talking about his sheep, or the shepherd, the good shepherd. And we can understand in Psalm 23, David was a shepherd. So we see a few of the famous shepherds that we see, not famous, but biblical shepherds. Some of the shepherds that we would have seen would have been Abraham, Moses, David, different people in the Bible that we see at different times who were shepherds. This psalm is written by David, so we would have understood this from a shepherd's point of view. So I wanted to kind of take you through that a little bit this morning and then kind of see what truths Psalm 23 has for us. This morning I do want to show you a video. This video is going to change our context a little bit. As we look to Psalm 23, we hear about green pastures. And sometimes when I was a kid, I remember always thinking about green pastures, and you think of Wisconsin, right? So in Wisconsin, you think of green pastures, and you go out into the pasture, nice green, lovely grass, animals love it, and maybe a little creek running by, because you have this gentle stream. And that was kind of always my imagery that I always had of green pastures, with just this great green lush grass with a creek nearby. Maybe you set up a hammock, a nice lawn chair, you know, you relax, there's no bugs that time of year, and just, you know, this just wonderful green pasture. So this morning I want to show you a video which I think will help get our picture as far as what David would have seen as far as green pasture. So if you want to play the video.
As part of the shepherd lesson, I did want to look at one thing in the wilderness that will maybe surprise you a bit. Believe it or not, this is called wilderness, Midbar, but it's also called green pastures. Now, when you take a Westerner here the first time and you look at this, you find people say, well, I don't know that I can go there, because the Psalm 23, the Lord leads me into green pastures, has been pictured as belly deep alfalfa. Well, you haven't seen any belly deep alfalfa. And from biblical time to today, it's rare to see a flock in the farm country. There isn't a lot of farm country in this culture, and so farmers kept the shepherds out as much as they could. Maybe they would come in a little bit after the harvest to glean what was left, but you don't want sheep where you can farm. This is the land of the shepherd. Right on the hillside across from us, you can see those grazing trails cut there by sheep maybe as long ago as Abraham's time. They're spaced so that an animal on one path and an animal on another can reach right to the middle between them. That determines the distance, so you can graze an entire hillside. And the shepherds lead their sheep across that hillside slowly, grazing what's there. Now, you look at it from here and you say, what's there? In fact, I remember my first impression. I woke up one morning, I was sleeping out in the wilderness, and I remember waking up, watching a flock of sheep on a hillside like this, and my feeling was, what are those rock-eating sheep? I mean, what do they eat? How can you call this green pastures? Well, the answer is, there's a small amount of moisture present here. They get a little bit of rain every year. Not much, but a little. Second, there is humidity in the air, especially in the evening breeze, like right now, you can feel it. Coming from the west off the Mediterranean, there's moisture in the air. That moisture, combination of the rain and the humidity, condenses or drips along the edge of these rocks here. And if you notice, right around the rocks, almost always next to the rocks, you get little tufts of green. Get one a moment. That's what we refer to as the green pastures. So the shepherd looks for a hillside. That's exactly what she was doing. Look at that flock across from us there. Just stunning. Those two shepherd girls have found a hillside that either was exposed to the wind or had that small amount of rain. And they move that flock across the hillside, and it's one mouthful here, walk a step or two, another mouthful, another mouthful, another mouthful. Now that changes the green pasture image a little bit, besides the picture changing radically. Green pastures are not everything you need for the rest of your life. If you make that belly deep alfalfa, then what God is saying, if you follow me, I'm going to plunk you down and you'll never have to move an inch the rest of your life. Just reach out and grab it. Tell me that your life with God has been like that. Worry, said one rabbi, is dealing with tomorrow's problems on today's pasture. In the desert, you learn the shepherd will get you what you need for right now. 10 minutes from now, you trust the shepherd. Just enough.
Does that change that picture of green pastures a little bit for you? Anybody memorize that as a kid? And okay, you guys can be honest. You guys can talk back. Things, I understand what Pastor Nick says. When you guys talk back, things go faster. You know, I won't stand up here for too long if you guys talk back. So as we look at this and we look at Psalm 23, we really want to kind of see what David would have seen, what he would have known as a shepherd as he walk through this. Sometimes it kind of opens up and just makes the words jump off the page when you understand the context of biblically when he was writing it, what he was talking about. So I want to read through this here, and then I want to kind of go through the 6 verses and tell you a little bit about what you would see from a shepherd's point of view. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou dost prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Thou hast anointed my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and loving kindness will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So as we walk through this, I just want to kind of point out a few things that we see in these verses. In verse 1 and 2, we can see the Lord being my shepherd, not wanting, making me lie down in green pastures, leading me beside quiet waters. It's that picture of getting them food and water. You would have known that as a shepherd, that was a big priority for a shepherd, was to get their sheep, keep them as well as they could, fed and watered, right? So that way you can keep your sheep alive. In 2 and 3, you kind of see this picture of he makes me lie down, lying down, restoring my soul. You see this picture of rest, needing rest. Sheep don't really ever lay down or rest unless they feel completely protected. But it's also in that rest that they do need to where they can actually lay down and rest a little bit. So as we continue on, there's going to be a few things here at the end part of this that I think are going to jump off the page a little bit to you. So in verse 4, as he's talking about his rod and his staff, they comfort me. A rod and staff a shepherd would have had, not only to help as a walking stick, not that that was primarily what it was, but it was primarily for helping sheep as they would have walked with the sheep for protection. We think of farming today and always having fence around everything, and your animals are just inside your fence. As you could see, even in the video, there's this picture of sheep just kind of wandering across this hillside, but then you also have predators and things that are going to be coming after the sheep. So we look at shepherds today, and if you had a shepherd today that had fence and all the sheep were in a field, it'd be pretty easy. Back then, a shepherd had to be a fighter. We kind of see this in the picture of David. We kind of know David's life as he's walked through, and we see the story of David and Goliath, right? All these fighters who are here won't even stand up against Goliath, but we have a shepherd. Like, you don't think of a shepherd being a fighter, but yet we see David standing up and willingly say, I'll fight. This picture of a shepherd, I don't think we would quite even understand here just because of the difference of predators. So even some of the predators that they would have had over there, lions, coyotes, wolves, different kind of predators that way. One of the other predators that I had been referred to that I never really thought of before was when we were in Orlando. I got to hear a guy speak, and the guy is a shepherd. Pretty cool thing. So he's a shepherd in Tennessee, and he was kind of speaking with some of how he shepherds his sheep in Tennessee. Again, being a little bit different than what you would see over in these kind of hillsides and these kind of countries. He said that he had an opportunity to meet with a shepherd girl who was from Yemen, and she was in the country visiting, doing some stuff with sheep and whatnot, but she was visiting, and it wasn't too far in Tennessee, so she actually came to his house. So he got to talk with her a little bit more and get a better picture of what shepherding would have been from her. So it's this girl from Yemen that he was talking to, and he said she understood the importance more of protecting, fighting, even with their rod and staff. If you would have had a lamb or any kind of sheep get hurt, that would have been something you would have used to help carry them. So shepherds were not weak at all. The other thing that he said that the shepherd girl from Yemen helped him understand a little bit is in the following verses here. Thou dost prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. That seems kind of funny because it's talking about eating in the presence of your enemies, and we don't really know quite what that means. As he's talking with sheep, you would think of sheep eating with their enemies. So one of the predators that she had also told him was that there would have been snakes. Snakes would have been a big a predator for sheep, primarily because they hide in those rocks down into a hole, and they wait for something to come over that hole. As soon as something comes over that hole, they strike. Doesn't really matter what it is. So if a sheep would have wandered over the hole, the snake is going to come out and strike no matter what, because it doesn't know what it is yet. Not that it would eat it later, but it would still strike. So as a shepherd, they would understand that snakes are pretty deadly because they would at least injure or kill the sheep eventually, because they wouldn't have any way of taking care of them. So this girl from Yemen had told him, this picture of preparing a table before me in the presence of my enemies is this picture of, she said, you kind of saw in the video, there's all these little tufts of grass as green pasture. Every once in a while, you find these little areas that have a little bit more grass, you know, not a ton, but a little bit more. You'd have a little bit better of a patch of grass. On these patches of grass, you would have these opportunities for the sheep to go and have a little bit more of their fill. The problem is that it was also the primary place for these snakes to hide. So these snakes would hide in this grass with these a little bit bigger patches of grass, she said, and that's where the snakes would be. So as a shepherd, you would come into these patches before your sheep would get there, and you would check the holes. You would check it with your rod, your staff. You would make sure that there's no issue. The problem is that you could still find snakes there, and you can't do anything about it. So you either don't have the sheep eat there, or you just have to keep moseying on to protect them, right? Well, they wouldn't do that. They would take olive oil and they would pour olive oil inside the hole, and it would prevent the snakes from coming out of the hole, and the sheep would literally be over top of them eating in these patches of grass with the snakes right underneath of them. So it shows a little bit better of a picture of preparing a table before me in the presence of my enemies, because it's a picture of the sheep eating right over what their predator would have been, the snakes. I thought that was pretty interesting, and it kind of livens up what that would mean. The other thing at the end part of verse 5 there, thou hast anointed my head with oil, my cup overflows. Again, we talk about anointing with oil. That wasn't necessarily the holes where the snakes were, but the other thing that they would have would be any kind of cuts or abrasions or anything that sheep would have on their face, they would have to protect them with oil. They'd put oil on those cuts, those abrasions, to make sure that they weren't drove nuts. And that basically meant that you would have flies and everything trying to just bother them and be in that cut and that area for them. If they didn't put oil on them, they said that the sheep would actually go over and they would be bothered so much by the flies and everything else, the larva that would be in the cut after a while, that the sheep would be driven so nuts that they would find a rock or something and they would pound their head on it to try to get those flies off. And they would keep pounding their head on it until they died. So without the shepherd's care of putting the oil on those cuts and abrasions, like, your sheep wouldn't last very long, because it happened quite often with their eyes and everything else. And it wasn't something that was just you oil them up once a week or every 3,000 miles like your car, you know. You'd have to put oil on their head every day. So it was a daily venture, maybe even a couple times a day, depending on the cuts and abrasions. But the shepherd would always be watching and making sure what the sheep's care and what they look like. Surely goodness and loving kindness will follow me all the days of my life. In verse 6, that was another picture that this Yemen shepherd had noticed a little bit and said that, you know, that part doesn't quite make sense, because sheep don't want to be followed. So you see this goodness and loving kindness will follow me. Well, you never want to sneak up behind a sheep because they just get startled. Even if you're their shepherd and you just kind of mosey on behind the sheep and just kind of stand there, not even try to scare them, as soon as they look around and they notice you, they're off, you know. So as we look to the truths of what these passages say, I think it'll help show what the truths are once we know what some of the shepherding was. So some of the truths that we see as we go back at the beginning in verse 1. One of the things I want to point out is, as we gather here as a church, as a body of believers, we talk a lot about, as a body of believers, what we should do, right? If you look at the text, one of the things that, how David states it, is everything is more in his person. So all the terms are I, me, my. And he even talks about the Lord in kind of third person. So the Lord is my shepherd. He restores my soul. He guides me. But it's this third person that he is talking about until later in the verses when he starts talking about you. Thou dost. The parts where you see thou or thy would have been you, your loving kindness. You have prepared a table before me in the presence of my enemies. So he kind of switches from third person to you. And it's kind of the way some of the Psalms go, as far as it's just this melodious tune that is a sense of where your heart is, where that desire is. And you can see that there was some of the truths of shepherding that was in here, but this is also something that, as the Psalms, we always talk about the Psalms and the Proverbs of the Bible being something to meditate on, something that we can look to, we can see that point and guide us. It's kind of like poetry. And in the Psalms, as you can see, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Just the first few verses really go completely against what culture says, because culture wouldn't say this at all. The Lord is my shepherd. Culture isn't going to want to have anybody be their Lord other than themselves, right? I shall not want. Just the first verse completely goes against culture, because that's the thing that our culture pushes. You should always want. You should want better. You should want more. When I was in Nashville building houses, the houses that we were working on were called starter homes. We call them starter homes because that's not where you're supposed to end. That's just where you're supposed to start. You start in a starter home, you work real hard, you get some more money, you get another house that's bigger. And then maybe that's even not even the end home or the dream home. So you work real hard again, you could continue, and then you try to buy another home. And it was always a picture of upgrading, not necessarily just moving to a different house, not just adjusting, but upgrading, trying to always make it better, bigger. So even as we look at verse 1, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Admitting that somebody else is your Lord is difficult for people today. It's difficult for all of us because there's times that we want to have that control. We want to be able to tell everybody what we're going to do, not what God's doing. It's also a picture of not wanting, understanding that the shepherd is providing for you. So one of the biblical truths that you see in Psalm 23 is that provision, the provision that the shepherd has for the sheep, providing. In verse 2, he makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. The cool thing in here is that if you look at verse 2, verse 3, you see he makes me, he leads me, he restores, he guides. There's this thing that he's doing, not something that we're trying to do. A lot of times we want to pick the path of our life and we want to go with it. And it's very, very rare that we plan for the future and things work out the way that we think it should. It's kind of like a parent knowing what's best for their child. So with Luke, since he's not in here, it's easier to talk about my own kids. So even with Luke, I remember a couple times with him never really, you know, wanting a nap. You know, a lot of parents, I don't know, you've probably had that issue. When your kids are young, your kids don't really want to go take a nap. They want to play. They want to hang out. But as a parent, you know what's best for them, right? There's definitely times that you know what they need is a nap. They need that rest. They don't want to admit that. They don't even want to lay down for a nap, if anything. So I remember talking with Luke one time about needing to go rest and saying, hey, bud, like, you know, let's take a nap. And he's at that point, he didn't want to have any of it anyway. So eventually he finally gave in. He took a nap. And then after he woke up, I remember asking him and said, you know, hey, don't you feel a lot better? He's like, yeah, I feel better. I said, okay, good. I said, you know, I said that nap did you good, right? I said, wasn't it, that's all you needed. I said, wasn't Dad telling you the truth? All you needed was a nap. No, he still wasn't going to take that. Like, yeah, I had a nap and I feel better, but that's not the reason I feel better. You know, it's for other reasons. And just trying to think of that difference between a parent knowing what a child needs, that picture of a shepherd knowing what the sheep need, whether they know it or not. And even afterwards, when they do get something good like that, it's not even something that they always admit. They don't even want to admit that it was necessarily the thing. But we do in the text look and see that it is God who is the one who's leading, who's restoring, who's guiding. I think it's important because we kind of want to see, we see the purpose of why. So in verse 3, he restores my soul. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. It's this picture of God leading, guiding, protecting, pursuing for his glory, for his name's sake. I think sometimes we struggle with that a little bit, right? We have this picture of understanding that God is doing these things in our life, but then he's doing it for his glory, for his goodness, for his righteousness. And like I said, as we look at culture, that's not something that culture wants to admit to. That's not something culture wants to go after. So as we see in Psalm 23, just having that surrender of knowing the shepherd has your best interests and that it's not a shepherd that's just a good shepherd. It's a shepherd that's a perfect shepherd. We think of parents and children and trying to do the best we can for our kids and doing the best things. I mean, as a father, I know that there's a lot of times I try to do the best for my kids, and yet I fail. There's a lot of times that I'm working through things, trying to help guide them and lead them, and it's not always with the best motivation. Sometimes the motivation is leading them and guiding them to clean their room because I want it cleaner, not because it's necessarily good for them or them even understanding that. Not saying a clean house is not a good thing, but there's a lot of times where the motivations are for self and not for the actual building and discipling of your kids, right? I think of that even when it comes to, as I continue to teach them and guide them. The other day, they had a chance to come out and work on a car with me a little bit, and most of the time, I was in a big hurry, and I'd have 30 minutes to fix something, and I had 35 minutes before I had to be somewhere, so I couldn't have any hiccups because I had to go. I was telling Pastor Nick the other day, I said, I've really, really enjoyed having that opportunity now to be able to slow down, and if it doesn't get fixed, it doesn't get fixed. But yet, at the same point, allowing my sons to help with those things and not just push them aside, and understanding that that's helping build those relationships with my sons, helping build them in understanding of knowing why we do things the way we do. Sometimes I think that's how God works with us a little bit. He helps, he guides, he teaches, he works on trying to nudge you to the right things, to the paths of righteousness. And as sheep, I always love the reference of sheep because, you know, sheep want to run everywhere. The first time for the nativity, we see the picture of what Pastor Nick has talked about with when the sheep got out and he had to run after him for 45 minutes just to get him back in. And then he said, I hate sheep. I don't like, it's hard, you know. And he's a pastor, so he's around sheep all the time, right? But it's this picture of sheep and just them just randomly running everywhere, not necessarily knowing what's good for them, but always very hard and difficult to deal with. But biblically and scripturally, we see the picture of sheep and shepherd throughout the Bible. So let's keep going. Verse 4, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for thou art with me. Having no fear, God says that a lot. Don't fear. You don't know where you're going to be. It's kind of the picture of the video again. You don't know where you're going to get fed 10 minutes from now, but you're still trusting that the shepherd has it in his hands. You're going to just follow him. You can follow a shepherd, and it's not blindly when the shepherd is the one who has the plan and he's in control. It's not following a shepherd blindly, and he's not even sure where he's going. God knows where he's going. Before time, he always was. His plan has always been set. But not fearing, having God by your side is huge. Because I think that there's a lot of times when we're struggling, when we're going through tough times, when we're going through trials, when there's things happening, we'd like to say that we're not fearful, that we're not fearing, but it still creeps in. It still comes back. There's also a picture that we see of his rod and staff comforting me. Comfort, that's another thing that we see with Psalm 23. We're comforted when we know that we're following God. We're not following ourselves. The thing with comfort, though, is that comfort, in even this context with shepherding, comfort is not absence of evil. Sometimes we think of comfort from a shepherd, and it means that the shepherd's always going to protect us, and we're never ever going to have to run into any bad things, any evil things. We're never going to have to worry. If the shepherd's comforting me, we're going to look prosperous, right? He's just going to give you everything you need. Everything's going to go well. You're never going to go through trials or tribulations. And yet we see, as Christians, that's not something we ever say. We know that evil is around, but we are comforted knowing that our shepherd is close, knowing that our shepherd is there. It's the rod and the staff. It's the tool he used to fight off the enemies that's comforting you. That is comforting, to knowing that the devil doesn't have any kind of hold over God. God is still sovereign over the devil. And it's in that comfort that we can be comforted, and not in the comfort sense of not thinking anything bad will ever happen or that it'll be the absence of evil. So in verse 5, thou dost prepare a table before me in the presence of thy enemies. Thou hast anointed my head with oil, my cup overflows. It's kind of that picture that we had seen as a shepherd when I was telling you about the shepherd from Yemen who talked about the snakes that would have been under these areas and having preparing a table in amongst these. It's a picture of God not secluding you from evil. You're still to live in the world, not live of the world. You're supposed to live in the world. God doesn't seclude you. Once you become a Christian, he doesn't throw you into another little town and say, hey, here's all the, this is the town of just Christians. So once you become a Christian, you're protected, you're comforted, because you know that that's all there is. It's not real, it's not biblical, on top of understanding that God doesn't seclude you. But there's a lot of times that we try to seclude ourselves. There's a lot of times we try to protect our kids, we try to protect our spouses, we try to protect ourselves. We're trying to seclude in those ways, and we're not necessarily relying on God to do the teaching and the guiding and the leading. We're looking to ourselves for that. The one thing he does is he doesn't seclude you, but he does prepare you. He prepares a table. He's the one that's preparing. He's the one that has you where you're at. You think of some of the missionaries that are overseas in dangerous situations, people who are ministering to people, and they have their life threatened. They have their life threatened from other people. They have life threatened from predators, animals, being in the jungle, in the wilderness, not knowing where your food's going to come from. And you have this picture of people not really understanding or knowing what's ahead, but also we still need to rely on the shepherd of he's the one who's prepared us, who's guided us. God's the one, if he calls you into something, he's not going to call you into something without equipping you. He's not going to call you into something without preparing you. He's always going to be the one that is preparing, who's guiding. And he's abundantly gracious. My cup overflows. When you look at the picture of sin and see what sin is and see what sin does, sin leads to death. But yet you can see God's grace and his hand in all things. So when during tough times, through difficult times, it's hard to necessarily see that. I know that even with Heather, with some of the health situations we've been in, when we were in Nashville, there was a lot of times where I wanted the one to control everything as much as possible, even though I knew I wasn't in control. But there's also this way of things had happened in life to me beforehand that prepared me for the circumstance. I remember when I first met Heather, her parents had reminded me after the first time she had gotten cancer that they were surprised that I stuck around. They thought for sure I was gone. You know, they said, once difficulty comes, like, he's not going to stick around. So they were surprised when I actually did stick around. And the thing that they didn't know ahead of time was that, the thing they didn't know that was ahead of time was the fact that my mom and dad had a little bit of a situation like that. And I had talked to my dad even before this when Heather just got diagnosed again and we knew that she was going to have to go through more treatments. And it was this picture of, I had talked to my dad and I told him, I said, I don't know what to do. Like, I'm not really sure what to do. Like, you know, what happens when you have a girlfriend who all of a sudden gets told she has cancer? Then you kind of knew she had cancer before. You talked about it a little bit, but she didn't have it at the present time. So when all of a sudden it comes back, it hits you hard. My dad had reminded me one time when he said, I can't necessarily tell you what to do because I can't give you that right answer. I can't tell you the exact things to do, the steps to follow. He said, but I am going to remind you that you need to follow God. That was good advice. The other thing he reminded was there was a time when my mom was having some issues up in Minnesota, and she was in the hospital with some issues. And my dad talks about a story of after doing chores in the morning, he jumped on his motorcycle, you know, has about as much hair as I do, so you can see how much breeze that really would have been. Maybe that's what took his hair away. So he jumped on his motorcycle and went to Minnesota. He walked up into the room, up into the hospital, got to visit for like 15 minutes, because that's about all he had from the time of about 15 minutes of visiting before he had to jump back on his motorcycle and head back home because he had to do chores again. So it was between chores in the morning and chores at night, and you had a 15-minute window in there where he got up there and got to say hi. But he also said, he said, I didn't ever know what to say to your mom. He goes, sometimes it was just the fact that I could hold her hand. Sometimes it was just the fact that I could rub the hair in her head a little bit and just comfort her a little bit. He said it wasn't anything in particular. So then when all of a sudden I had gotten put in the same situation and Heather was diagnosed with cancer, the first time that I know about it, I didn't know what to do. And it was just this picture of relying that God had stuff in control. I didn't know exactly what that meant. Didn't even follow it very well. But I knew God was in control. I knew God had prepared me for this. God had taken care and guided me, even though I didn't know what I was being led and guided to, right? In verse 6, surely goodness and loving kindness will follow me all the days of my life. As I said before, there's this picture of sheep not wanting to be followed. So don't think of it in the sense as following and creeping up on sheep that you're right next to. But I don't think sheep would have a problem getting followed if they're lost. When you have a sheep that's lost out in the wilderness and the shepherd is following, if the shepherd, the word is more of a pursuit. If the shepherd is in pursuit of that lamb, you should be comforted. Because if you always know that the shepherd is in pursuit of you, that's where your loving and goodness, your goodness and loving kindness will come from. Because you understand that it's not the shepherd following you and he's just always watching over your shoulder, but he's, even when you're lost and you don't know where you're at, he's pursuing you. He's guiding, he's leading, he's pursuing you. And it's in that pursuit that I think we understand how important it is to always be aware of who our shepherd is. Not that it's ourself, but it's God. So as I was talking about John before, John chapter 10, 11 through 18, Psalm 23 kind of pairs a little bit with John, because this is the words from Jesus. So Jesus is speaking here. If you have a Bible that has red letters in it, this would be in red. But you see Jesus speaking here. So John 10, 11 through 18. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who is not the owner of the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he's a hired hand and is not concerned about the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and I know my own, and my own know me, even as my Father knows me, and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep which are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will hear my voice, and they will become one flock with one shepherd. For this reason the Father loves me, because I lay down my life so that I may take it again. No one has taken it away from me, but I lay it down on my own initiative. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it back up again. This commandment I received from my Father. Even Jesus in John has quite a few times where Jesus is speaking in this. He says, I am the shepherd. We go back to this term, I am again. In John, Jesus says, I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. Before Abraham was born, I am. This is always this picture of I am. God was here before all of time. It's not a shepherd that has watched the sheep run away and you got to kind of take care of them and handle them. This is a shepherd who knows every step, who knows every path. He's the one who's leading. He's the one who's guiding. He's the one that we have to look for. So as we close today, I just want to challenge you guys to meditate on this, to look at Psalm 23, to look at that in your life and understand what we see as far as the biblical truths, the truths of him providing for you, him comforting you to where you don't have to have any fear, him preparing you and him pursuing you. And what does that mean for you? What does that mean in your life right now? What are you going through right now that you need to rely on God as your shepherd to walk you through this, because you don't know what's going to happen? You don't know where the other end is. What is it that you need to look to? So I challenge you this week just to meditate on Psalm 23 and understand what these truths are, and know that as we see in Jesus, as he says, he's the good shepherd. And we see the gospel. He tells us the gospel in John. It's that same picture of him laying down his life, not because he has to. He does it on his own initiative. And then he takes it back. He has the authority to take it back. So he conquered death. We see the gospel picture in John. And that's the point as we look at shepherds and sheep. Sometimes we want to make analogies and figure out who the shepherd is, who the sheep is, everything else. But we just want to understand that God's a shepherd. He's the only good shepherd, but he is a good shepherd. Even when you're walking through tough times, he's still a good shepherd, because he's the one that's still preparing you, guiding you, leading you.